This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to Chicks Talking Footy with Fee and with Motti. And with us today on the eve of the AFLW Season 8 is General Manager of Women's Football, Nicole Livingston. Welcome, Nick.
It's nice to be in the studio with you rather than in the elements out on a balcony somewhere at a footy
game. Exactly. Thanks so much for coming in.
Pleasure.
We'll start with the big questions, which is often the way we like to go. When you're at the footy, is it pie, chips or hot dog?
Can I share a little secret with you?
Of course.
I have only at AFLW eaten a pie on one occasion, and it was a closet eating pie because I had a photographer in the first season that I came to AFLW say, I'm just waiting to get a photo of you eating a pie.
Have you heard of the comedian Geraldine Hickey?
Yes, I have.
She's a big Bomber supporter and she's exactly the same. She will not eat a pie because she saw someone getting it all over them on the screen one time and she goes, nah, I don't want that to be me.
So from that moment on, because you know it will be the photo of me with my mouth open with a pie like falling out one side and then all my friends on social media will have a ball with that. So I do like a pie. And can I tell you that in Adelaide, which was the one place that I have had a sneaky pie at the football, I think it was at Unley Oval, South Australia do a footy pie. Have you seen it?
No.
It's really good. It's a bit more of an oval shape.
Beck Dahl has not told us about this.
No.
She's a Crows supporter.
Ask about the footy pie.
She's our Adelaide specialist. Okay, now that we've nailed that, and we won't bother looking for you with a pie, just a nice little only
I'll
offer
be you, under the stands.
We'll only offer you a nice little chip.
That's
dainty
it,
little
that's
chip
it.
From now on. So I said season 8 then, and unbelievable how quickly they've gone.
Yeah, it is. It is. And don't forget we did 2 in 1. So
that's right.
And we had one that didn't get completed. So it's been one hell of a journey, hasn't it? Over 7 years and now into our 8th season. So we completed 7 seasons in 6 years. Mm. We're not at the final destination, but so far it's one hell of a journey.
It's packed a lot in.
We have. Yeah, we have. And now we're complete. 18 teams, 540 players. It's pretty exciting.
Well, you've got there to the 18 teams a lot quicker than the men's game did.
Yeah, we did. And we think, and I think you'll understand this, as we were going on this journey when we started, not every club was wanting to bid for an AFLW team. They were thinking that the growth was somewhere else. And then very quickly as we started AFLW, they cottoned on that the growth was actually in women.
And not AFLX.
Or China stage. I don't mind alternative formats. We do have a lot of women and girls playing alternative formats around Australia in Australian football to fit in where we don't have ovals. Because, of course, we've had so many women and girls come to the game. We need an oval a week, every week for the next 5 years to keep up with growth. So I don't mind alternative formats. But, yeah, we've got to 18 clubs very quickly. And as I tour around and go to these clubs, sitting in the Swans the other day, how could you not have them with a women's team? It makes sense that all 18 clubs also have an AFLW team.
Sure does. I'm happy the Bombers are finally in.
Yes, we waited a long time for the Hawks and Bombers to get in, didn't we, Motti?
That we did. And on my angle, Bombers, they might be slightly better than the men. So, you know, happy about that. It's been a difficult 10 plus years being a Bombers supporter.
Yeah, well, you've got some exciting women playing AFLW. And I would say that Hawthorne has recruited very well this year.
We have drafted very well, I believe. So there was a lot of conjecture about how many rounds this season would be made up of. And for us super fans, it seemed like an eternity before it was announced that there'd be 10 rounds, which is actually no change from season 7. But despite the players being very keen for a 12-round season, how and why did you settle on 10 and how intense were those discussions?
Yeah, look, the discussions continue. We're still, the AFL and the AFLPA are still discussing the collective bargaining agreement. And what I will say is that there's a negotiating team from both sides that are working through that and it'll take the time that it takes. We, in the history of AFLW, have only done one multi-year deal in a CBA, and that was a 2-year deal. I think it was season 3 and season 4. So to have something a bit more long-term would be the aim so that we can plan in advance each and every year. In terms of the season length, I do want to try to start to steer this towards celebrating what we have and remind everybody that 7 years ago we didn't have anything. We now have 99 games. The first year that we started, we had 29. So actually our match growth is 241% from season one to season eight. So they're big numbers. It's a lot of growth. I hear a lot of people say, oh, yeah, but you play more community football or you play more rounds in State League or even Coates League, our pathway. You know, our rounds cost around $3 million per round to run. So
do you mean what the top level, $3 million?
AFLW, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, collectively as an industry, clubs and the AFL, we're nearing $300 million invested into AFLW in 7 years. I mean, that is a lot. And I think most Olympic sports would kill for those kind of budgets. Somebody told me the Rugby Sevens women's yearly budget the other day, and it's nowhere near scratching anywhere near what we're doing. So there is a lot going into AFLW, but what we are trying to do is to do this sustainably. So it's here for our children, our grandchildren and generations to come. There's been plenty of examples of going too big too quickly and not being able to be sustainable. So we're at 10 and 4. I'm trying to steer it away from talking about 10 and 4 and just to talk about the fact that we have AFLW season 2023 here. And let's get into it. Let's celebrate it. Let's get into every single match that you want to get into and barrack for your team and barrack for AFLW and barrack for women's football. And then we'll go again in the next season, season 9, season 10. And we're not adverse to growing. We want to do it sustainably, though. We want to build the fandom. We want to build more people coming to the game, watching the game, listening to the game. And make it sustainable.
Well, one of the big announcements last week was the $1.1 million prize money, and we were debating how this actually works. So does the it says the prize money was the same as the men's comp, how is it split between four clubs, whereas the women's is split between eight? How does that all work, and how's that break down?
So from the start of AFLW, when it first started, February 3, 2017, that was the way the prize money was split across all teams that made the final. Of course, as we've brought more teams into the competition, more teams have made the final. And it has been a directive or a request from the players and the PA that more women receive more money, more pay.
So rather than four,
the top four, which is where the men's were, or where the men's is top four. But the prize money is equal, and that's an increase of close to $600,000. Let's not be flippant about that. That's a fair increase in prize money, a big increase in prize money. But yes, it's split across eight teams, which means more women receive more pay.
And how does it work? So if they win a game, the club is expected to split that evenly across the players? Or how does it?
Yeah, it's across the list. So the men's have a slightly different way that they calculate it. They calculate with the number of games that you've played. You get a percentage. But for AFLW, it's split across the complete list of 30 players that are on the list.
Oh,
so
great.
Again, more women receiving more pay.
That's fantastic. So it's like the tip jar at the cafe. Everyone just gets a split.
Look, there's always a lot of discussion around that.
I feel bad for the tip jar now because nobody's got cash.
Nobody's
ever
got it.
No, you can do it on a card now.
Well, I better get on to
that. Write that down, Marty.
I will. I know. I'm writing a few things down. I've got a few of your figures written down, which is good. Wonderful news this week that Laura Kane was announced as the AFL Executive General Manager of Football. I'm gathering that covers both
AFL, AFLW, yep. VFL, VFLW.
Okay,
so any competition, Coates League, any competition that the AFL runs, Laura is in charge of that. That also extends to talent, umpiring. She's the big kahuna. She's my boss.
Wow. She joined us for our first episode back this year, which was unreal for her to come in. So we were thrilled. She's a fantastic appointment, shows the growth of women in football is very much off field. As much as on. And is that been something that the AFL have wanted to progress?
Absolutely. The AFL as an organisation from an administration point of view is around 40% women now. Laura, myself, Lisa Laurie, we all sit together. Lisa and myself will now report into Laura and have actually done so for the past few months as she's been acting. She's not only been acting in the EGM of football, but she's been doing Brad Scott's old job as well as her GM job. Like she's done three jobs at once.
She seems so calm.
She's the best administrator I've met.
Wow.
I've met a lot through Olympics and through sport. She's calm. She's just really thoughtful. She's strategic. She advocates and you know, she loves the game. So I'm excited. And I do want to make sure that it's crystal clear that, yes, she played AFLW or she played footy, women's footy. She's been a president of a women's football club. But prior to her, in the history of AFLW in the last 7 years, we've also had Steve Hocking and Andrew Dillon as EGMs of football in the same role as now what Laura is taking. They equally loved women's football. They equally loved AFLW. Mm. So I don't want people to think that the men that came before Laura didn't support women's football and that now suddenly, you know, hallelujah, we've got a woman at the table, so it will be different. You know, she does understand it intrinsically. But the men that came before her also loved and supported AFLW. I am looking forward to working with Laura as to where do we take it now.
I get what you're saying, and it never entered my head to think that those guys didn't support it. However, it's still the kids at home see Laura.
Absolutely.
You know, see Laura Kane.
Yeah.
They see you. I don't know Lisa Laurie, but they, you know, Lisa and other, you know, and they can see them and they go, oh, or I could be a president of a club like Peggy or, you know, Kylie Watson Wheeler.
We've made a conscious effort to really focus on away from on-field football and making advancements for women to be able to work in the game. We want women to be able to look at administration of the game or coaching or umpiring or whatever it is that they want to be and understand that there is a pathway. Lisa has been running women's umpiring talent days around the nation.
Oh, gosh.
Unbelievable. Mm. She's unearthed amazing female talent, women talent in umpiring. So she'll continue to evolve that. We had a 63% increase in women umpiring AFLW last year. Laura has hosted and run the Women in Football Department's pilot program. So we had 43 women from around the nation come in to experience an immersion day. And they're already in the industry, but not necessarily working in footy operations or the football departments. So it was about them getting a feel for it. And if they want to be in football, in the football department, then they've got a way to do it. We've got the Women's Coach Acceleration Program where we've got 9 women coaches that we're co-funding in the men's program. So this is Daisy Pierce coaching at Geelong.
Mm. And you've got Chloe McMillan down at
Collingwood with Chelsea Randall. Yep, Chloe's one of them. Mm. Chelsea Randall over coaching with Matthew Nix. So we have 9 women across the nation that we're co-funding, and it's a decent wage because that's part of the issue with women when they want to jump in to do something like coaching. It's a bit bits and piecey. So, you know, they're not paid a lot, so they have to do other jobs as well because they need to be able to support themselves and their families. So then the question comes, well, how come she can't commit? Or, you know, so now these wages are 2-year contracts, decent wages that the clubs are co-funding.
That's
with the
fantastic.
AFL.
That is
so good.
So good.
There's heaps going on. I mean, you just scratch the surface with what we're doing.
The World Cup, the FIFA World Cup that's just happened, I mean, there must be such a momentum coming from that on the back of the AFLW season this year.
I mean,
it really made a statement that if you don't invest in women's sport, you're a bit silly.
Yeah. I think, we knew the Women's World Cup was coming. We knew the Matildas were beloved. There's nothing quite like the green and gold. We have been planning for AFLW season 8 since November of last year. So we've had a massive pre-season as well. and we're really excited about the rebranding, the, you know, more than double the marketing budget that we've got to be able, I don't know whether or not you've gone past Rose Street and Fitzroy, you know, there are murals and there's,
I run the market block up from there. So
yeah.
It's massive. It's like
it's everywhere.
Yeah, I've seen them on on socials, but not live.
Yeah, so we've been doing this for quite some time. So I don't want people to think, oh, they've suddenly cottoned on. You know, the World Cup's made them wake up. You know, we are committed to this. As I said, almost $300 million in investment as an industry into AFLW. We're not investing like that because we want to get it wrong. We are investing because we want to get it right. Mm. It's going to take some time to get where we want to get to, but we want to do it sustainably. And the World Cup just shows that, hallelujah, women play sport. Oh, and they play footy as well. Imagine that.
We became chicks talking the other footy for
the
a couple
footy.
Of weeks.
It was just an energy, which is amazing. Yeah. And I know, you know, lots of AFLW games, obviously, if you're only at one game, it's a much smaller scale. But and we can go back to the first game ever. The energy around that night is something I'll never forget, how incredible that was. Just sticking with a question, something about Laura Kane. During her opening speech, she said, One of the priorities is higher scoring.
Yeah.
So how do you propose for that to happen?
Well, we've increased each game by 8 minutes. So
okay.
that straight away gives you the opportunity for more scoring, which is higher scoring. We've also introduced 5 rule changes that we believe as a package will actually allow for more scoring. So you add 8 minutes to every game. We've also added an interchange cap. We've in the inside 50s, you know how all the way around the oval we've been bringing the boundary in by 10 metres for the throw-ins. What we've found is inside the 50 arcs is they've done like, it's like a CSI episode, they've done like a splat pattern of where the ball's landed over time that we brought those boundaries in. And it's actually not landing majority of the time in a position for scoring. It goes out the D50 and goes out the back and gets turned over. So by bringing it out to the boundary line inside 50s, the umpiring team are very confident that it's going to actually land in a place that's better
that
for scoring.
That they can move it forward or something. Okay.
So
that's interesting.
Interchange cap of 60, which means it's going to increase fatigue. And with increased fatigue, defensively some mistakes occur. So with those mistakes... scoring happens. So it, seriously, it has the analytics crew, and Professor Damien Farrow has been leading this. And if you don't know who Damien is, prior to being at the AFL, he helped Mac Horton win a gold medal in the 400 freestyle in Beijing by coming in and working with his turns from a skill acquisition point of view. So he's a pretty smart guy. So he's been looking at this for a couple of years now.
So he knows how to... do the one percenters or the
he does know how to do the 0.001%.
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
Beautiful. One question we did ask Laura this as a disclaimer, so we will compare your answers.
Oh God.
No, I'm only kidding.
We're normally in sync, so let's see.
So the 5 PM games have been a bit controversial with some people.
Yeah.
When we asked Laura, she did have an answer. But what are your thoughts on this time slot? Because as someone who's paid for home and away memberships, there's some 5 PM games that I'm not going to be able to get to because of work.
Yeah, so the Friday 5 PM, of course, it's a bit like prawns and avocado. You're either going to love it or hate it. But we do see it as a family-friendly slot on the weekends as well. So for families to be able to take kids, it's not the 7 PM slot. So they can actually go enjoy a game of AFLW. It's not as long as the men's game. So we believe that those 5 PM friendly slots, I think the way that we consume things, it's changing as well. I don't know how many people you know that are actually at work at 5 PM on a Friday these days. The majority of them... potentially are working from home and could head off to the footy or could be working as they're transporting themselves to the footy. So, you know, we think that they will work, particularly on Saturdays and Sundays. We think they'll work well.
Yeah. Okay. Your answers compare.
We lose the 5 o'clock games actually while the men's finals are on, and then we bring them back post the finals.
Okay. All right. Your answers were the same, so you passed the test.
Well, that's interesting that you say about your – putting matches before the men's, because the NRL have, well, the NRLW have done that quite successfully before the
We're not doing any double headers.
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood. I thought you were saying you're moving the 5 o'clock.
Yeah,
okay.
We do move the time slots around a little so that there is a bit of clean air between the men's and the women's games. Mm-hmm. But we're not doing any double headers. And, you know, from our point of view, we actually want AFLW to thrive commercially as well. So when there are so many things to consider with double headers. Are we asking fans to stay instead of 3 hours at a men's game? We're now asking them to tack on a women's game as well. There's got to be an hour between the two games. So you're asking them essentially to go for 6 hours to a venue. I don't know that resonates well, first thing. Second thing is with the men's competition, we can't put our signage on ground. You can't coexist out. So then we have to explain to our sponsors why we can't have our signage on the ground. So
but if the signage is digital, how can that not be
then you're missing
just flipped?
Then you're missing 90,000 at stadium that don't get to see that signage.
Right.
Yeah. Trust me, we've prosecuted all of it. You name it, we've prosecuted
fair
it
enough.
And tried to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We might just quickly jump forward to Pride Round, which is always, you know, a wonderful calendar event for
it's gay Christmas.
For Chicks Talking Footy, but for the, you know, LGBTI community and hopefully for communities beyond that. So what are we expecting for that? And, well, and why aren't the men's league following? Let's do it in two parts. Yep. What are we expecting in round 10 for that Pride Round?
Expecting a wash of colour. I know that. I'm going to tell you a bit of a scoop. We've got a Pride footy for the first time.
Oh, how unreal.
Yeah. So it's pretty exciting. I know my media guy is sitting beside me, Caleb, so he's now going, damn, there's one thing that we don't get to announce when we do Pride.
Is that
Well, we're the environment to announce
it's fine,
so.
It's fine. So it's really awesome. And I think Sharon's looking at doing some mini footies as well. So now I've said it out loud, Sharon, have to do mini footies.
Yes, I'll buy one.
So I'm going to jump back to Indigenous. We've got a beautiful Indigenous ball, but we've had an Indigenous ball before. And Gab, our artist, is actually Michael O'Loughlin's sister. So she's done a wonderful piece of artwork in the Indigenous ball or on the Indigenous ball. And then we've got a Pride footy for the first time. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Wonderful for both. Which is the Indigenous round?
Seven and eight, and then 10, round 10. We finish with a bang and a celebration of AFLW with Pride Round.
Because last week the Four Corners report came out.
Yeah.
So it's shown the difference in the way we celebrate Pride between the men's and women. I mean, there's a stark difference. Mm. What do you think the solutions are there, or will we ever get a Pride Round in the men's?
Well, I can speak for the women's, and what I will say is that we are very welcoming in AFLW. I think the core of our base has come from the LGBTQI plus community, and we've celebrated it. We've gone from a match to a couple of matches now to a Pride Round. I think this is our third year that we've had a full Pride Round. It's important for us as AFLW not only to wrap our arms around our players and our community, but also to allow footy to be a safe place for people to come. And that's what AFLW has always been. From my point of view, and I think organisationally as well, that if a male player was gay and wanted to come out as gay, we'd all wrap our arms around them, whether it's one player, whether it's more than one player. There are people that I work with. We have a Pride and Allies committee at work. So I think if a player was gay and wanted to come out from a men's competition point of view, we would all wrap our arms around them.
We were having a debate, weren't we, on our Chicks Talking Footy chat, because a show is not enough for us. We have a messenger chat that we're constantly on, and we were actually this morning, you know, maybe it's not the on field, maybe it is the broader, perhaps it's the audience, not the clubs, and then extrapolated from that, and maybe it is just the broader community who are not going to accept it rather than actual football people.
Yeah, but because I've seen it in AFLW, even the acceptance of women playing football is still not resonating with some sections of the community.
Mm.
And we do our best to stay on top of that from a social media point of view, but there are still people that say that women shouldn't be playing football. So I think it's in time that is changing. We're seeing it less, and we hope generationally as we see more little boys come to the footy with their dads, with their mums, with their sisters, that changes, that there is this respect of women playing football and it suddenly is just footy. That's utopia where we're not talking about, you know, it being men's footy or women's footy, just everybody gets to play football. I think that's the same when we're talking about, the comfortability of being who you are in your own skin, whether you're a male player or a female player. So I think it's the community getting giving it support around it as well, and acceptance as well.
Well, that's a perfect discussion to go out on. So, Nick, thank you very much for coming to join us on Chicks Talking Footy on the eve of the season. We are beyond excited as I reckon you are. So see you at the footy sometime.
Well, the Doggies are coming back online with Witten Oval, so we normally catch up at Witten
Oval. Yeah, okay.
So I think after round five they come online with their new redevelopment. So I'm looking forward to going to many venues and Witten being one of them.
All right, I'll put it in the diary.
I see you putting it in your
diary.
Yeah,
I'm putting it in, and we hope to also do something around Pride Round. Yeah. So now that I've said it on air.
Who's going to win the grand final? Wait, back Ooh. Up. Come on. And you can't say Essendon or Hawthorn. Or you can if you wanted to.
I don't know.
I've caught you on the hop.
Oh, yeah, you absolutely have. I haven't.
I mean, it's hard with this part of the season because we don't know how the...
You don't know yet.
It's been so long.
And practice matches aren't something to go on. I was talking about Melbourne and Brisbane. I mean, lay down Mazzeer always.
Yeah.
But I reckon North's pretty keen.
Well, 34 players have moved clubs this year. Between 7 and 8. You've also got the likes of Collingwood, who are now going to have basically two recruits to have Britt Bonici and Bree Davey back, which even though they've lost Jamie Lambert from the middle and Steph on the outside, Steph Chiocci and Chloe Miller. Chloe didn't have a great season.
No,
sorry,
but
Chloe.
She's flying up at
Of course
at
she
Sydney.
Is.
She's
but
thriving.
That's a big change to a team. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's something, if they're good.
With the Pies, I reckon you're right.
Yeah. All righty.
We all sat on the fence really well.
Yeah. Thank you again.
Pleasure.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.